alcoholic. And I just want to start by thanking Sam for asking me to come up here and do this. I didn't really have a choice. I think everybody else in my home group spoke up here at some point or another. So, I kind of feel like I'm in the club now. My sobriety date is January 27, 2011, so I'm still pretty green. That's not the first time that I've been to Alcoholics Anonymous. The first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting that I went to was in 2003. And it didn't stick for about 7 or 8 years. I was in and out of here. I was a familiar face for a few months, and then I was an unfamiliar face for a few months, and that's the way it went for a while. But I'm thoroughly convinced that I was probably an alcoholic since the time I came into the world. But anyway, I've got a home group in Charlottesville, Common Solution. It's been mentioned, but we meet on Thursday nights at 7:30. Got a great bunch of guys, the guys that are in my home group and gals. We're pretty much on the same page as far as the solution for alcoholism. And for a long time, it's funny, when I was coming in and out of here, I'd see these guys and I'd come to that meeting because I liked a lot of the guys in there. I just thought that they were just a little bit too Nazi AA for me. You know, that worked for them, but my case wasn't that bad. And I didn't need to do what they were doing. So I was kind of working my own program for a while. That was the program of just going to meetings, not having a sponsor, not taking the steps. I mean, I like the meetings. I like what I heard in the meetings, but it never did stick for me. I think alcohol really had to beat me up enough to where I was willing to just do what you guys have been telling me to do. Like I said, my sobriety date is in January. In a couple weeks, I'll have 2 years if I make it that long, which I have every hope of doing, but you never know. So I'll start off by just a little bit about my drinking. I grew up right over the mountain here in a town, Storstraft. I don't know if you guys have heard of that little place, but I grew up there, small community. I had a lot of friends, a couple really close friends. You know, it's one of those communities when you know the people you met in kindergarten kind of thing. And my good friends and I, you know, we were involved in sports and everybody knew everybody. So it was just a tight community. And in high school, I played a lot of sports, and sports kind of kept me out of trouble for a long time. Yeah, I was football and then wrestling and baseball, and really wrestling was the sport that I excelled at. And when you wrestle, you got to cut a lot of weight, so it's hard to cut weight and consume beer. And so I was pretty committed to wrestling, so I didn't. You know, it really kept me out of a lot of trouble. I mean, literally, it really did. When a couple of buddies and my friends were getting busted at parties, I was at home, not eating, cutting weight for the next day or something. But so sports really kept me out of trouble. Now in the summertime, I remember the summer between my junior and senior year. That was a real fun summer. That was really when I started really taking off drinking. And it wasn't like I was an everyday drinker. We'd party on the weekends or maybe a Thursday or Friday night. We'd have a couple beers, but really that was when alcohol really, really worked. And I was introduced and I was always looking back now that I've kind of been sober and went through this stuff with a sponsor and was able to like lay down an inventory and kind of see where I was. That's growing up, man, I was just really uncomfortable with myself. Now on the outside, I tried to make an appearance that I wasn't, But you know, once I had a couple beers in me, I felt like I wanted people to see me. You know, I really just kind of like my shoulders relaxed a little bit, and I could be me around people. And I loved that feeling. You know, that summer between my junior and senior year, we had a good time. I was introduced to a lot of different things, but alcohol really stayed in the back of my mind. Even through my senior year with school and wrestling, you know, whenever I had a chance that you know, I didn't have a tournament that weekend, or we didn't have a football game or a baseball game, you know, my buddies and I were usually drinking a couple beers somewhere. And I didn't think anything about it. I thought that's what we were supposed to do. You know, we were kids, you know, and it was harmless. And then after high school, you know, I just realized that, you know, this sport thing is fun, but it's not going to take me anywhere. I've kind of felt like I put my time in, and now it's time for me to really enjoy life a little bit. So I did the college thing for a while, and I wasted a lot of my mom and dad's money. And I got put on academic probation about a year and a half into it. And they just kind of said, you know, you need to figure out what it is you want to do. I was just using school as a partying launch pad, really. I didn't go to class. And when I did go to class, it was just, I wasn't paying attention. It was just something I did in between partying. And, you know, I had my best friend's dad, he was an alumni in Blacksburg at Tech. And so, he bought a townhouse. And so, my friend could live off campus his freshman year. And so, that became really, not a smart move on his dad's part. I think we had the carpet replaced a couple different times. We had a band set up in the living room. This is a townhouse, you know. But it was good times, you know, and everybody was doing it. You know, it was just kind of that thing, you know. But I looked at my friend, and, you know, and this is when I started thinking that maybe something was a little askew with my drinking, because a lot of my friends were drinking like I drank at parties. But then after the party was over, they were able to maintain their normal lives and go to class and that kind of stuff. When the party was over the next day, I was, if I wasn't suffering from a severe hangover, I was probably going in. I just wanted to extend that feeling. I guess I always thought that alcohol, my drinking was just something I would grow out of. I thought it was just something, and it was just some growing pains from my youth. And this is what people do. And then I'll grow out of it and grow up and get into the real world. But, you'll hear later that doesn't happen. After a while, you know, I dated this girl from Tennessee, and you know, it's just all about this girl. You know, she went to UT, and I was in Virginia, so I was going back and forth all the time, and you know, it just didn't work with me drinking the way I drank, and her being down there, and I just thought that was everything. You know, I'm an alcoholic, so I've got to have something to fill that void in my life. You know, I didn't realize it at the time, but I was using this woman as a higher power of some sorts. You know, she was filling that void that I couldn't fill. And that's what alcohol did. You know, it's, you can't physically stay drunk all the time and live very long. So I was trying to, you know, fill that hole with a lot of other things other than alcohol, but most of the time I was pretty sedated. I moved to Charlottesville in 2000, and at that time it was because I'd met a girl, and a different girl, And this girl lived in Charlottesville, and this girl was, you know, she had her stuff together. She was a UVA grad. She had a good job, and you know, I'm working as as an electrician. And it was fun at first, you know. I mean, it was fun. It was we had a good time for a while, and I'm still drinking heavy. And you know, I remember a couple months into the relationship, she brought up the way I drank. You know, I was drinking every night, and I didn't think that there was any problem with that. And at that time, you know, a couple beers a night. I was on a couple beer a night program there, and I guess it about a year into it, you know, she had kind of seen some warning signs and brought it to my attention. But I was able to use her as that void filler for a while. And, you know, so I slowed up drinking a little bit, and it's been my experience that doesn't last very long, at least not for me. It's going to, after a while, the shine wears off, and I'm going to go back to drinking. And most of the time, when I go back to drinking, I pick up not only where I left off, but a lot worse. And so that's what happened. But anyway, somewhere along the lines, I was able to get married to this girl. And, you know, we got married, and it was, at this time, I really didn't realize I was an alcoholic, but I knew I liked to drink. And what really, I guess the turning point of my drinking was my dad passed away in 2000, and my dad and I were pretty tight. You know, we have a farm in West Virginia. It's a hunting camp that my dad and his four best friends bought, and the buddy that went to Tech, his dad was one of those guys. So, you know, I'm there with my buddies all the time, and it's a pretty neat place. But we did a lot of drinking there. Well, it was one hunting season. The hunting season of 2000, my dad had a massive heart attack and died in my arms. We just got out of the woods. We were hunting, and so, you know, I think at the time I was maybe 24, 25 years old. I didn't see it coming. It was just really, really unexpected. He was 53 years old, so it was not like he was an old guy or wasn't in bad shape or anything like that. It just happened, and at that time, I didn't really know how to deal with that. You know, thank goodness I had. My ex-wife was with me, and so, you know, I really had some support there. But I guess in 2002, I'm still, you know, kind of dealing with this stuff, and I'm drinking heavy, and my drinking's progressively getting worse. You know, I'm staying after work. I'm going to the bars with the guys after work and not coming home and not calling. Not making the phone call and letting my wife know where I am, because, you know, with that phone call, you know, comes questions and you know, stuff I just don't want to hear at that time. You know, I'll deal with that later kind of thing. But in 2002, I'm trying to think, I had a little bit of a meltdown. I tell this story because some of the guys in my home group are, every time I tell my story, they're like, "Yeah, you got to tell the fence story. You got to tell the fence." So this is the fence story. Well, I was at the house one night, and my wife, I think she was with her mom, and her were taking a class. They were not there, and I guess I had at least 8, 9, maybe 10 beers, and it's just one of those nights where it just sneaks up on you, and you're like, "Wow, I'm not feeling any pain," you know. So, but anyway, we lived in downtown Charlottesville, and a lot of times there were cars. There's a little store down from the house, and a lot of guys and a lot of kids would would pull up in front of our house to go to this store and leave their car running with the music just blaring. And I'm trying to enjoy TV and I'm trying to enjoy my beer, and these guys are, you know, not letting that happen. So I go outside and I tell them to turn this stuff down. I probably didn't say it like that, but I did go outside, and they didn't appreciate that, and I wouldn't either. So anyway, I parked my truck up on the sidewalk and just to block so nobody could park there, and I told them not to come back. And then I go back inside and I continue drinking, and about 40, 45 minutes later, I hear a knock at the door, and there's two police officers, and they tell me that, and I didn't know this at the time, but it's actually illegal to park your truck on a sidewalk in Charlottesville. And so they told me that I needed to move it or they were going to tow it. And I did not want to get in my truck because I'd been drinking, and I thought this was just a plot or a setup for them to take me to jail. And so I explained to them, look, I've had a couple beers. I don't feel comfortable getting in my truck. And they didn't want any part of it. They just wanted my truck off the sidewalk. And they let me know that. And I guess I got kind of offended by that. But anyway, I did get in my truck and I put it in four-wheel drive. And we had a chain link fence in front of the house. And so I backed over the fence and I parked my truck on the porch. And then I got out and asked if that was off the sidewalk enough for me. And they told me they were going to take me to jail for destruction of property. And I explained to them that I owned the property and I could destroy it if I wanted. And so they left, and I can't believe that they left, but they left. And in the meantime, my wife coming home and seeing this flips out. She doesn't come in. She calls my mom. She calls, I don't know who else she called, but anyway, I continue to drink, and the next morning I wake up at about 6 o'clock to the sound of someone knocking on the door, and my dog is just really barking, so I know it's somebody that she doesn't know. And it's the same two police officers, and they said, Mr. Garrett, you're not under arrest, but you've got to come with us. And I asked them where we're going, and they said, we're taking you in for a psychiatric evaluation, and you've got to go. Okay. I got in the car, and we went down to a little place, I guess it's where Region 10 used to be, but so we're there, and I'm talking, and I'm still, I know that these people are probably just getting drunk off of my breath, because I'm still... About pretty gone at this point. And so I'm talking to the counselor, and she ultimately said, hey, you know, he's not crazy. He was just really intoxicated. But that took care of that problem, but it didn't take care of the fact that I'd parked my truck in the yard, and my wife had come home and saw all this stuff. And deservingly so, she wasn't ready for me to come back home. And so I had to think of something pretty quick. And so I decided that I would check myself into a program across the mountain for depression, because I had no idea at that point that alcohol had anything to do with it. I thought that I was just really depressed. So I go in and I'm in this place for about 3 or 4 days. It didn't take long for them to evaluate me as depressed. You know, we're pretty good at telling people what we want them to hear and what we don't want them to hear, especially when it comes to the professional field. But I did my best to tell them that, you know, I was just really depressed. You know, I'm still not over my dad dying. And, you know, this is going on, that's going on. And they said, well, it sounds like to me you're just really depressed. What we're going to do is put you on an antidepressant, and we're going to let you go home today. And I was so happy, you know. I can remember thinking this in my head. Thank God, I thought they were going to say I was an alcoholic. So I left out of there. I've got these antidepressants that I can take that are going to make me great. And I'm going to walk right out of there. And I went, as soon as I got out of there, I was so happy. I talked to my wife, and, she thought that maybe it just was depression. She was relieved, and she said, come home. And I was just so happy. I went to the convenience store, and I bought some beer, and had to celebrate a little bit. And, that's just crazy. And that's when I really knew that, I really thought that, you know, that's probably, that's not what normal people would do. And if I was really depressed, I wouldn't be worried about it. I mean, I was just, the biggest reason I was glad that I wasn't diagnosed as an alcoholic is because I didn't want anybody to stop me from drinking. And this went on for, it didn't take much longer, maybe 3 or 4 months. And I really messed up again. I came home, a couple friends of mine and I went out on a Friday night, and we didn't get back home until Sunday. And of course, my wife was just irate. And so at this time, and she moved out. She moved out. She went with to her mom's for about a week. And this is really when I knew that that something was wrong. And so I at that time had heard about Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was actually still seeing this counselor from when I was admitted to this place, and he kind of put a bug in my ear about AA. And so I found a meeting, and it was Saturday morning, and it was my first meeting of AA. And I went in there, and it was a speaker's meeting, and the person who was speaking is sitting in here tonight, which is pretty cool. But that was my first taste of AA, and a guy came up to me at the meeting and asked me if I thought I was alcoholic, and volunteered to be my sponsor, at least temporarily anyway. And I had no idea what AA was about. I didn't know what the sponsor stuff was about. I just wanted my wife back. And I said, hey, you know, whatever works. Of course, I didn't tell him that, but I'm sure he could read. He could read me like a book. So we met, and about a week later, my wife and I went to the counselor together, and I was just so proud to tell her, hey, look what I'm doing. You know, I'm going to AA. Everything's fine now, you know. And she moved back in, and then I stayed sober for about 4 months, and then I got off work. I relapsed. Most of the time when I relapsed, it was when things were going good. It wasn't when the stuff hit the fan or anything like that. It was when everything was A-okay and a couple drinks won't hurt it. That's when I relapsed again. I think everything was good. I got off work early on a Friday, and I picked up a couple beers, and I drove around for about an hour looking at it. And finally, I just told myself, look, you're going to drink it. You might as well. You're just wasting time. So I did, and then didn't get home until late that night. And like I'd never stopped drinking. It was just crazy. And my wife knew, and so I was able to, after that night, get back on the so-called wagon and try it again. And and I think I lasted maybe 3 months. It got less and less the longer I went. But after a couple years of this, you know, she had just had enough. And I'm leaving out the most important part. We did have my daughter. And during this the whole time my wife is pregnant, you know, I'm in and out of AA, I'm drinking, I'm getting reprimanded at work left and right. Things are falling apart, but I'm trying to put up this facade that nothing's wrong. And after my daughter was born, I was able to stay sober during that whole thing. I went to an outpatient program, again, just to save the marriage kind of thing. Not for me, but I thought it would help keep peace at home. When my daughter was born, I was sober at the time, and then a couple months later, I went back out, and my wife could see the writing on the wall. I wasn't going to get any better, and So she left. She'd had enough. She left, and you know, I can't blame her at all. You know, for a long time I tried to, but then after we separated, you know, I thought, you know what, this is gonna be. I'm gonna have time to do what I want to do. I'm gonna live like I want to live, which meant that I would be able to drink every single day, all day long, and that's what I did for probably a year and a half. I was just miserable, miserable, miserable. You know, I got that whole fear of impending doom thing going all the time. You know, I'm looking out windows. I'm like, who's watching me? I'm going into stores to buy beer, but I'm waiting until there's nobody in there until I go up to the counter. Going to different stores because I don't want anybody to think that I'm an alcoholic. I'm shaking so bad I can't even go to the DMV and get my tags renewed because I can't sign the paper. And at one point I did go to the DMV and I had to do this. And I was shaking so bad that the woman working, I told her that I had a nervous condition and I couldn't sign my name. And she said, that's okay. I think I used that one in diabetes a couple of times. But, you know, that's what I would tell people. So, you know, at this point, and I moved to this little cabin in the woods, which was, the place was built for drunks. I mean, I had a screen porch, you know, I'm off the beaten path, you know, I had a couple neighbors that drank like me. So we just, I could turn the music up as loud as I want. And that's what we did, you know, that's what I did. And, it's funny how we kind of, we were like magnets for other alcoholics and heavy drinkers because that's all I was hanging out with. If you didn't drink like me, I'd hang out with you for a little while, but then I'm going to go drink out like I want to drink. And if you did drink like me, you were more than welcome to come and hang with me. Eventually, you know, two alcoholics drinking for about 2 or 3 days straight are not going to see eye to eye eventually, you know, after a while. So, you know, that would run its course, and then it would, you know, you'd have to face reality for a little bit. But we did have a house. We had some, before I got divorced, my ex and I bought some land in Nelson County, and we had to sell it. She bought a house, another house in town, and she needed the down payment. So we sold the property, and we made a pretty good chunk of change on it. And I think my take home was around $40,000, and that's not a good amount of money to give an active alcoholic. Because after I went straight to my landlord and I wrote him a check for the whole year. He never had anybody do that, but I didn't want to have to worry. I didn't want to have to see my landlord or even worry about it. So I paid him off for the whole year. So I got this money in the bank. I'm just going to have fun. And it took me 3 months to go through it. And I was going to New York. I was taking trips everywhere. I mean, it was just not just trips. I mean, I'd take a trip to the bar and blow $500 or $600 in one night because I want everybody around me to have fun. You know, if I'm drinking, you're going to drink. And I'm going to spend, you know, in the meantime, you know, my daughter's college fund is not getting any money put into it. All this stuff that I'm not doing, I'm just irresponsible, selfish, irresponsible. I was a total mess. And I woke up, once that money was gone, I woke up one morning and I said, what have I done? And so I went back to AA this time and I got a sponsor. And I was real gung-ho, you know. I was like, let's do this thing, you know, I want to do this. And I got a sponsor, you know, I got one of those sponsors that was out of town, so I could talk to him on the phone, but I wouldn't have to see him a whole lot, you know. I was working my program kind of thing. And so that kept me sober for about 6 months, and I stayed sober all summer. And you know what the crazy thing was? I got back to work and I started actually excelling at work again. I was going to a lot of meetings, you know, I was going to 5 or 6 meetings a week, but I wasn't doing the steps. I kind of halfway did a fourth and a fifth step, but I downloaded some of those chart things that you can kind of check off that people use sometimes, and I was kind of doing it myself. But I stayed sober for about 6 months, and I didn't, you know, I just went back out. And then from that point on, it was an off and on thing. You know, I think I went back out for about 9 months and then came back in. It was just at that point, I just wanted to die, really. I was trying to hold it together. That whole fear of impending doom was just on me. The four horsemen were all over me. I was scared to death. I thought every time I woke up and I had a hangover, I thought I was having a heart attack. And, you know, I don't think I was, but it's in my head that, you know, I'm really doing damage, and I'm not going to live that much longer. I might as well enjoy this stuff. But, there are a couple little outside issues as far as, you know, other things, but mainly it was just alcohol. And, so anyway, Christmas of 2010, I'm driving back home with my daughter from my grandfather's, who lives down in Smith Mountain Lake. And, you know, she's back there, and I'm driving home, and I'm coming unglued because it's 6 o'clock in the evening, and I haven't had anything to drink all day, and I'm shaking. It's raining outside. I've got to drive all the way back to Charlottesville. I've got a 2-hour drive, and I'm not going to make it. And so I had to pull over, and I've got a couple beers stashed away in the back that I took from my grandfather's house, you know, and I just got them down. I got to drink those beers just so I can function. And we got back home that night, and you know, I got her home, and I went to my house, and there was another guy in my neighborhood that he's in the program now, and he's been sober almost as long as I have, which is awesome because we do a lot of drinking together. I went and saw him, and man, I lost it. I just boo-hooed, and I said, I don't know what to do. And he was still drinking. I mean, he was pretty intoxicated. But when this man looked at me and told him that, and he told me that it probably wasn't good for me to drink, I knew something was wrong because this guy drank. And so that was just kind of the eye opener. That I'd been missing, you know, and like I look back sometimes, I would look back and think about what it would have been like if I had just gotten sober the first time. But you know what? It took everything it took for me to do what I'm doing now. And so when I made my mind up, I came in this time, and it was like January 2nd or January 3rd. I came back into the rooms, and I was in here for like 2 weeks, and I was talking to a lot more people. I was really, you know, I'm going to do this time. And I was in here for about 2 weeks, and it snowed, and I got off work a little early. And I said, you know what? And a couple of my neighbors were already at home, and they called, come on down. We're going to have a party, and it's snowing. And I said, well, let me go to the store. So I went to the store, and I picked up a couple beers. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do this, but I just want to see if it's still there. I want to see if I can. I just want to give it one last try. And so I drank really, really fast. I went to the party and we've got the thing at the time. You know, this is just a couple years ago, but one of my neighbors had got a new turntable, and so we got to pull out all the albums that were on vinyl. Man, they just sound a whole lot better. And so we're drinking and watching the snow fall, and within 3 hours I'm passed out. And I woke up and I was like, you know what, that's it. This is not going to get any better. So I came in, and I went straight to the home group that I'm in today, and I went there and I was like, look, I need a sponsor. And and I asked one of the guys that I'd seen, I looked up to, and I kind of identified with. And I said, hey, would you be interested in being my sponsor? And he said, absolutely. He said, there's a couple things that I require, and I said, I don't care what it is. So we met and we sat down, and that was on the 28th or 29th of January 2011, and we sat down. He had a couple requirements, not requirements, suggestions. He likes to call them suggestions. And so one of those suggestions were that I get a home group, and so I agreed. I thought that was a good idea. He said that I'd have to get two committed meetings a week, and he suggested that I get this one meeting in particular, which was all the way down in Buckingham on Tuesday nights. And I couldn't see the point in going all the way down to Buckingham, but I did. Like I said, I was just ready. And so I got my two committed meetings and made my three phone calls a day. And then I did that for a long time. And for a few, probably 6 or 7 months, I was calling people 3 times a day, and I called my sponsor once a day. And I knew something was changing when my sponsor called me up one day. He was like, "Hey, you don't have to call me every day anymore." And I was like, "Really?" He was like, "No, you don't have to call me anymore." So I'm thinking, did I do something wrong, or am I getting better? So anyway, we've got this, involved in this home group that these guys are just a really tight group of guys that, I identify with on a really high level. You know, a lot of these guys drank like me, they felt like me, they've done the stuff that I've done, and then they're better now. And I learn a lot. I'll still learn from these guys. Every time they open their mouth, I'm listening, I'm learning something. And not only am I learning something from what they say, I watch what they do, and they don't just talk to talk. You know, they're walking it. They're going to conventions. You know, they're sponsoring a bunch of guys. They're doing this, and they're coming and speaking. And so they put AA first. And you know, for a long time when I came in and out of here, you know, AA was just something I did. You know, my life outside of AA was my life, and then AA was something I did, and I didn't want anybody that was in my life to know that I was going to AA meetings. I mean, I was embarrassed. This time when I came in here, today AA is my life. And the stuff that I have out there is because of what I do in here. And, you know, it took me a long time to learn that. But, you know, it's kind of like when you got nothing left, you got nowhere else to go. I mean, AA is right here going, "Hey, come on." You know, it's, and it's just crazy, you know. There's just so many messed up people that are not messed up anymore, and not just not messed up, but doing the right things and living good lives, and that's where I want to be. And I know the only way to do that is to follow suggestions from my sponsor and work with other alcoholics and go to a lot of meetings and come and speak when I'm asked. And all this stuff, you know, gets me out of my head, because when I get in my head, it's not a good place. And I start thinking, I'm crazy up there, man. It's, it is not the epitome of proper mental health by no means. But, I tell you what's helped me a lot too is just, showing up early. And, you know, I've had the privilege of working with a couple guys since I've been in here. And that's really helped me go through this stuff. It takes me back. I don't forget where I came from. I'm going through the book again with someone else. And a lot of times I'll catch myself, you know, kind of giving advice to these people. And I'm like, "Hey, that's pretty good advice. I ought to try that sometime." You know, but, you know, it's easy. I'm the kind of person that wants to rest on what I've got. And that's good enough. You know, I'm a good enough kind of guy. I was always a C student in school, and that's just good enough. You know, I could have done a lot more, but I'm just going to do the minimum. And that's what I don't want to do here in AA. You know, I've got to be an all in or nothing kind of person. And so far, you know, I can't. You know, it's, I can't really. I don't know how to explain it, but, you know, I kind of get this thing now, and for a long time I didn't, And, you know, I'm fairly convinced it's because I joined a strong home group and a sponsor, and I took the steps. And I tell you, the whole committed meetings and going to five or six meetings, sometimes I hit seven meetings a week, but most of the time I'm always five or six. But I have to have, and I realized this after Christmas, because Christmas, I'm not blaming anything on Christmas. Christmas comes, and that's no reason to drink or do anything funny, but it does disrupt my meetings a little bit. You know, I can't hit the meetings that I want to hit. My schedule gets thrown off. But I've realized that even though my personality and who I am don't really like that kind of regimented schedule, you know, I'm an alcoholic, so I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it. But I excel when things are regimented in my life. And so, you know, that just tells me again that, you know, I don't know, I don't have a clue of what's best for me. And, even though I want to think I do, I really agree with, 100% of what I read in the big book, you know, where it says that, we're self-will run riot. And that was me, to a T. I also today don't have, every day in my life is not perfect. Things come up. I don't feel the best. Someone makes me upset. Someone, you know, I'm scared I'm going to lose something. These things are coming up, but, you guys have showed me that, you know, when these things come up that, I've got things I can do, you know. First I pray for God to remove them, and then I focus my attention on helping someone else. It seemed like there was something else I was trying to get at, but I'm still not quite 2 years sober, so it's a little foggy sometimes. You know, it's the first year when I, the first year that I came, you know, the first year was like, you know, it was just kind of like, I don't want to say pink cloud because that's kind of cliche, but it was like, you know what, it doesn't matter what happens out here. Right now I'm concentrating on getting sober. And that was where I needed to be. And the second year has been kind of, okay, you're sober. You've done these things. Now let's apply them to the outside life. And that's where it's a learning experience. You know, I mean, I learn from my mistakes just like I learn from things that I do well. And it's been a really good year to grow. I'll put it like that. I'm glad that it's getting ready to be another year. I've got people in my home group and that identify with me, and they know exactly where I'm at. Second year wasn't a picnic for some of those guys. Now some of them it might have been, but I don't talk to those guys too much. I just, I only talk to the people I can identify with. It's been up and down. And, you know, I think that's just life. You know, AA, whatever is thrown at me today, AA has an answer for. And, whether it's, if I just go to a meeting, if I pick up the phone and call someone, anything I can do to get out of where I'm at that particular time helps me. And I've got a lot of friends here that, you know, I really look up to. When I leave here, I'm going to go watch a game with my sponsor and a couple guys from the home group. And that's just that. I think that's been the saving grace this time, a tight home group. You know, these guys are like a family. Whereas before, when I was in here, you know, I was separating AA. I still have a lot of friends outside the rooms, but you know, I'd hang out with those guys, and they didn't have any idea I was going to AA, and I wasn't going to tell them. But now it's like, you know, I'm hanging out with the people in AA now, and the people that I'm, you know, the people outside of AA, you know, I have told most of them do know. So, and it's not like it was any big surprise. They're kind of like, oh, good. I have no desire whatsoever to go back to that old life. And I know that I will if I don't do this stuff in here. And you guys have taught me, whether it be from watching people come in and out of here, or whether it just be from personal experience from people that are in my home group or in the rooms in general. You know, it's you don't do this stuff and you start resting on your laurels, you're going to get out of here. And that's what they tell me. And most of the time, they're right on what they tell me, so I don't want to chance it. So today, you know, I'm hitting meetings basically, like I said, 5 to 6 a week. I say yes to AA. I call my sponsor on a regular basis. I'm always talking to. I talk to somebody from my home group at least 2 or 3 times a day. Either they'll call me or I'll call them. But this program has, you know, it's like. It's the end of the road. This is your final. If you don't do this, I hate to make it sound like it's a it's something bad, because it's not. But it was like I didn't have anywhere else to go, and I found the best place I could be. It's a lot better than I don't remember any time in my life when I've been as comfortable or as happy as I am now. And it's all because of the things that you guys have taught me. And the only thing I did to get here was just make a complete jerk of myself and act a fool and be an alcoholic. And the things I have today are all because of you guys. So I don't have too much more to say, and I feel like if I do, I'm going to be rambling. So I just want to thank you, Sam, for letting me come and speak, and thanks for you guys being here.